This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he'd lay the phone down and start playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for what is episode 100.5. We did a full episode number 100. It was a bit of a preview for Wembley, but we only got it out on the day of the final. So we might stitch the Scott Hogan touch count after the end credits here, just in case you haven't listened to that show, but you want to listen to the Scott Hogan touch count. That will be after the end credits, so hang on for that if you want. But joining me on this episode, Mr. Chris Budd, welcome back.
Hello.
Hello.
I saw you on the train on the way down to Wembley.
You did? You were lively that day after 2 hours sleep. David was dying for everyone, and we both looked very French, so he looked like a very angry, tired Frenchman that morning.
I wasn't angry.
You looked really happy to be there.
Just jaded. No, I had a good day. It was just a bit muted. I've actually put it up on Patreon Extra. I was invited to the Royal Box, not by the club. I mean, the club never give me anything. This is just by being an outstanding member of the community at large.
Stand-up fellow. Gentleman and
stand-up
scholar.
Fellow. No, I was invited by somebody at the Football Supporters Association who's actually on the FA board. And because I'm on the National Council of the Football Supporters Association, he was very kind to invite me. I mean, you know, this is something you could just give to a buddy or you know, his missus or something. So it shows you what the good guys, the FSA, are. They know who would appreciate it the most. I mean, I've explained this in the Patreon Extra, just my insights into my day, which probably wasn't as exciting as most fans' days, because I slept after the game, woke up about 10, and then places like Box Park wouldn't let me in because it was closing. But anyway, we're not going to do a reaction, and that, I mean, we, you know, these are the things you do straight after the game. We're just going to, I'm going to pose a question, and we're just going to take it from there. And the question is, a lot of people, Dean Smith said, if we play like this, as in the gallant loss against Manchester City, in our remaining fixtures, we'll be all right and we'll stay up. And we'll just judge Villa's chances of staying up based on what we saw against Manchester City. And actually, it was kind of a blueprint of what has happened at the rest of the season when we've played particularly the top 10 teams, which obviously we have to play a bunch of, and we've only beaten one, and that was Burnley, who I wouldn't really class as a top 10 team, if you know what I mean. We've got a lot of games against the top six, never mind the top 10. But I would disagree with this sentiment that, oh, if we play like that, you know, we'll be all right. I think that's, A, you're assuming something and cutting out the need to work for it. And B, we've played like that so many times already this season and got beaten. And we have to focus on winning and getting 3 points. And that's the most important things here. Game by game. None of this 11 cup finals left bollocks. You just take it game by game and you got to win it by any, you know, it's similar to what we did last year when we went on the 10.
Yeah.
10 game run, we didn't really think about the stretch. We just took it, you know, week by week.
Yeah, get a bit of momentum and then just keep it going and ride the crest of a wave if you can get on one.
Because, you know, you look at the next 5 games and it's Leicester, Chelsea, Wolves, Liverpool, Manchester United. And most people, if you're looking ahead and trying to plot how many points, you're not going to get a big wheelbarrow full of points. You're doing the usual plotting ahead and trying to pick points. You can't pick points. You've just got to beat the next team that you play. And, you know, you'd be surprised that teams in low positions traditionally have, because they desire it and they need it more, that desire is even more than a, you know, a top six team. And, you know, we saw it, Watford beat Liverpool 3-0. We saw Norwich beat Leicester. And this is what, you know, what Villa need to start doing. It's not about being gallant and playing like we did against City. I mean, I know what people are saying. It's like, you know, if they put that effort in. But how we played against City, they were similar to that game against Liverpool, similar to the first game of the season against Spurs, even against Arsenal, where we showed we can compete, but we were making stupid mistakes as we did against City. The marking was slack on those 2 goals. I mean, obviously, the second one was a dubious decision anyway, but it still doesn't excuse how Villa set up. And, you know, that is a question. Let's address it now. Having Mings as the attacking zonal, if you like, defender, which certainly leaves you, because we're a bit short, actually. I mean, Target and Gilbert aren't the tallest guys. And then you look at the midfield, you've got Nakamba, you've got Louise. You are kind of lacking in height. You haven't got that. Samatta's not your big number six. Sorry, your big number nine, who is useful when defending corners. So we are lacking in a bit of height, actually, yeah. When you think about it.
And Jack's not exactly known for his aerial prowess.
So what do you think about it? I mean, we got caught out on it, and that's not the first time we've been caught out by it. But all you have to do is get the ball over Mings, and then, you know, it's the Engels versus the whole team. So do you think it's wiser to stick Mings on their main man, or, you know, how do you think it should play out?
It's a difficult one because I see the role that Mings can play, but of course it was a good delivery. And when you've got quality players who can put a good ball in, it's all right if it's a floated delivery and Mings can react and go, right, see ball, head ball, let's go. But when it's whipped in at pace, everyone has to track their man. And I think even if Gilbert tracks his man, I don't know if he wins that header anyway. To be honest with you, I don't think he would. I think it'd be more competitive. But I mean, you know, the guy gets into a good position. It's a free header, but it's a great header when he gets it ultimately.
And you know, and to be fair, Gilbert was pretty much there. It's just that he knew he wasn't going to win that ball.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't jump that high. I mean, all he can do is just hold the guy's shirt so he can't jump, and then he got a penalty.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a conundrum. I mean, looking back, we predicted we hoped for the Mings Engels. We suggested that was the way to go. Not only for the final, but onwards, because it showed enough of the potential at the start of the season that was a centre-back pairing. You just really defensively needed to sort out your wider midfielders to see how they could defensively support the full-backs.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that actually, although it was a bit of a surprise inclusion, I thought putting Al Mohammadi in front of Gilbert was probably a wise decision. Although it probably didn't play out necessarily how he would have hoped. But I think against other teams, that could be a way to go, just because I think Trezeguet and El Ghazi, to play them both at the same time is very risky. And I think El Mohammadi's actual consistency of delivery is as good as someone like Trezeguet and El Ghazi in terms of if you want to put the ball in the box for Samatta, which obviously where we got the joy on, you know, at Wembley. He's not a bad option, and it will make you more solid. But in terms of moving forward, you know, it's all very good and well setting up with a bank of 10 behind the ball to stifle teams, but to stay up, we are going to have to be proactive, open up a bit and go and win games, which I'm sure we'll come on to in a minute.
We got a listener question in, Sebastian. It's from Instagram, so there was not enough characters left to actually see the surname, but it's Sebastian Back. Is that the Skid Row lead singer? Ooh. I think was his name. It says, have you ever seen El Ghazi and Trezeguet in the same room together?
Solid point.
It said, what are their differences? Aren't they literally the same player? Pretty much how they're utilised.
Pretty much, yeah. I think they're both kind of tricky without having that extra yard of pace that they probably need.
And they're not like super consistent, but they do pull out something once in a while. I mean, like Trezeguet, get us in.
They're similar to a lot of our players, aren't they? They're always good value for something, but they're just not an 8 out of 10 every week that you need. We don't have enough 8s out of 10.
I mean, for example, you could put a good YouTube compilation of them together, each of them probably, just from their time at Villa, but you'll be struggling... if you're a scout watching them all the time, you would think, they're not really consistent.
Especially if you're watching them for 90 minutes when you want the complete package. And that's where,
seeing what they're doing in terms of tracking back and their defensive.
Their overall, as Perslow put, their overall body of work is very sort of up and down.
Yeah, so, going back to the actual final in terms of anything, any rays of light that you actually saw as positives going forward. Put it this way, I think I felt better about Villa's plight after that game than I did it after Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, Southampton was one of those, you get them through a season, just one of those awful days where everything went wrong.
But even though we didn't directly drop into the bottom three, you knew we were because obviously we had, other teams had fixtures. But, I mean, the good thing was even when we went 2-0 down, it wasn't like this is over. I mean, the body language wasn't over. The crowd didn't believe it was over just yet. And I thought the response was pretty good. And the goal, I mean, I think I said on my solo podcast, it's like an Andy Gray diving header. And diving headers is something from the 80s
or a great header before that. Because where I was sat, I was right behind it. So as soon as it's left, he said, well, that's in. And it flew in. It was a brilliant... And to be fair to El Ghazi, as much as he's, as we've said, quite hit and miss, it was when he got into position after, Stones' usual weekly donkey-esque error, El Ghazi's cross in, his first touch, obviously heads it on, crosses it first time. It's a brilliant ball in. Maybe a little bit of hit and hope there, if I'm being cynical, but...
Well, no, it looks great. I mean,
puts it on the money, and you think, he can barely miss, and he doesn't. He buries it.
Maybe being a little bit cynical there, because he can do great things.
Absolutely.
He did great things last time we were at Wembley. But this is the thing: you feel like with El Ghazi, you can carry him if you've got like another solid 10 players, and he's like almost like a luxury. But it doesn't matter if El Ghazi plays a great game or not. If he does, then bonus.
I think if you've got McGinn in the middle or a Horahan or someone like that who's going to be a little bit tidier with possession, you can kind of just let him go. And then when he gets a bit of confidence, he looks great, doesn't he? When he knows he's got the beating of a fullback, then you can see his ears prick up and he's bang up for it then. Like he was in the playoff final.
Because, I was going to say the problem is we need a bit more from him. We need a bit more of an all-round game because of the deficiencies of the rest of the team. And we can't really rely on him for that. But, there's definitely a role for him, even in a good Villa team, after we've added three or four more players if we stay up in this league.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But Samatta... The fact that he's taking his chances. This is good news.
I like him.
And I think we said in episode 100, this is somebody who made his debut in the semi-final. He's only been here a matter of weeks, but he's not one of those players where we have to defend him and say, give him a chance to settle in. He's kind of hit the ground running, and that's the very minimum that we needed.
If I'm right in saying, he's actually had the ball in the net four times. He's had obviously two disallowed, but he's... You give him chat. I mean, it's not like he's... I can't remember a game thinking, oh, God, he's fluffed his lines. Like, I remember last season we had multiple conversations about Abraham every other week going, oh, well, he scored this week, but he missed two or three as well. So matter, he gets a chance and he buries it.
Pretty much like the new revamped version of Scott Hogan that the Blues have got. Somebody actually sent in a question, wanted us to talk about Hogan's form. I mean... I haven't been watching the Blues. We covered Hogan in the Hogan touch count, which you will get at the end of these credits, which featured in episode 100, as we mentioned earlier on. But, I mean, the only thing you can say about his form is it's bang on for a striker at the moment. He's pretty much scoring every game.
Well, he's playing as part of a front two, isn't he? And I think that's one of the big things for him. He has a partner in Jukovic who does all the real dirty work. He lets him get in the box and score goals, get on the end of things, and that's what he does. But at Villa, of course, he was having to play as a lone striker, and that probably isn't his game.
Max Stokes at Villa on Tour actually asked us a question, and he said, what about Samata and Kieran Davis? And I mean, so just based on just Davis coming on against Manchester City, I mean, obviously,
put himself about, didn't he?
You're thinking when he comes on, oh, this is a good move. And then you're thinking, what's he doing? He's coming on for Samata.
Yeah, surely,
come on. I appreciate you don't want to leave the midfield light against Manchester City, but we're in death or glory mode here. For example, if you've got that, the one thing I wanted was just as. When you're chasing any game, you just give us one chance. Just one chance in the last 5 minutes.
And we got it, didn't
and
we?
It's almost if you don't get that chance, you just feel deflated. But if you get that chance, even if you don't take it, you at least you feel like you gave it a go.
Which they did in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. So when you're looking for that last chance, that's when you need an extra strike run. Because if you get that last corner, if you get that last free kick and you want to get it in the box, you need as many strikers on as possible. And you saw Davis, when he got the ball, City couldn't get it off him.
It sticks, doesn't it, with him? I really like him. I think that there is potentially a little shift that you could make to make that front two work. You might have to play a little bit narrower, but you could still give Target and Gilbert license to get forward. And especially when you've got McGinn back, you know you've got more legs in the middle of the park.
Because that was the problem. He had the ball. He was running with it. He was taking three or so City players with him who couldn't get the ball off. But there was nobody to naturally feed to, like instinctively. Yeah. If he was playing as part of a two, he's like, right, I know where Samata is. I'm threading this through to him. But he just had to carry on running with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, walking out the ground, that substitution, it kind of summed up Villa's day in a little bit in that I thought we could have had an extra gear, I think, when we had the ball. I just thought, be a bit brave, have a bit of courage, be braver with the ball.
Yeah.
Because I really genuinely thought, as much as City can always hurt you when they've got the ball, and they always look likely to, they're going to against anyone they play against. But at the back, when you see John Stones,
well, yeah,
Fernandinho, Bravo in goal, in terms of defensively, Phil Foden, I think Phil Foden is great with the ball, and he had a deservedly got man of the match. I thought he was very good. But he's a small lad, he's a young player. You've got to get him facing his own goal and like give him something to think about that he's not used to and kind of bully him a bit.
I mean, Stones obviously slipped up in the game for the goal, and I had to put Davis on, kept Samata on, told Davis just get on Stones' side and just bully through him.
Yeah, absolutely. I just felt we had that bit of, we got into some good positions.
By the way, listeners, we're not promoting bullying here. it's not good.
Only on the field. But I just thought we got into some good positions. In possession, sort of in and around the box and in the Manchester City third. And I think we just panicked a little bit. And that's where someone like having Hourihane in the game in the opposition's third makes a difference. Having two men in the box can make a difference because there was something to be said for just getting it in there and just competing for it.
Who would you play midfield if you went Samata and KD up front?
I would.
With McGinn coming in, so remember that.
It would probably be something like a 4-3. I don't know.
I want names.
I think you'd probably have to drop Louise for McGinn. I don't think you can drop Marvellous. I think
I loved his two-footed tackle.
Oh, that was incredible. Brilliant. Incredible.
Don't understand him being booked for that. That was like old school.
Yeah, it depends your system.
I wouldn't have been surprised if they sent him off, put it that way. But thankfully, the referee wasn't a total arsehole.
Yeah.
Who would you go for? Your next game's against Leicester. You're thinking, right, we're going to put it up them. We're going to play two up top. Who do you go for in midfield?
You'd probably play with a back. You're going to play
Your job's on the line, bud.
Oh, hang on. Something like a 4-2-3-1.
He's getting his whiteboard out.
I am on the whiteboard. I'd play Davis down the middle on his own, and I'd play like Jack and Samata kind of off him. So you'd probably jettison Louise for McGinn, and I would probably let Trezeguet and El Ghazi loose off the bench as your plan B, and I'd bring Davis in for El Ghazi.
But who's Davis come in for? El Ghazi.
So what that potentially does is it makes you narrower.
So it's like a 4-3-3.
It's a
4-3-2-1.
4-2-3-1.
To explain the three behind Davis.
So you're obviously going to have, probably for me, Rainer in goal if we're going to do the whole team. Target, Mings, Engels, Gilbert. I would play Marvellous. McGinn coming from slightly deeper, potentially. Or you could play like Connor in that role. McGinn, Grealish, and then maybe Keenan Davis slightly off the striker. But essentially, you're going to have like a fluid sort of front three or four who can all move around a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like a shambles defensively.
We've got to be brave, though. It's like you can't. I don't know if you can play two sitters.
We're talking getting hammered. It doesn't. I mean, what have you got? Nakamba back, and then what have you got protecting the two fullbacks, as we mentioned earlier?
Probably
on?
Horahan or McGinn.
Well,
McGinn
that's you fact, then you're relegated.
But you can't play a back seven or eight, can you, either? It's like you can't put everyone behind the ball. At some point, you have to be expansive. It depends if we're going to go to. If we're trying to win games, or are we trying to nick games?
But we're talking about who does Davis replace, who does McGinn replace, and you're also putting Horahan there in the mix as a starter.
If we're just pulling two out, as I said, if I'm pulling two out, I'd pull Louise out for McGinn and I'd play Davis over El Ghazi.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah, it's tricky. There's nothing going down the sides, really.
It's how do you shoehorn people in, and I think that's why Horahan hasn't been playing.
Yeah.
Because on paper, the team that played at Wembley has a reasonable balance to it, but it was still ineffective because it just didn't have any of the ball. I think Louise for McGinn is a very kind of a much easier change to make. I think if you're going to play two up front, then I think you change the completely change the dynamic of the team, and you probably have to play three at the back then, because you probably have to go like you would have to go 3-5-2.
I was going to say that, because you need width, really, if you're going to play two
Villa
up front.
Villa do, especially. Kind of, and if you're going to play people like Davis and Samata, they need service out wide. Even if that's just by having the two wing-backs bomb on, I think that's what Smith has to try and encourage, but it's tough, especially against Man City, because you know if Target goes, if that ball's past him, he ain't going to get it back, is he?
Well, yeah, and it's definitely a conundrum. But, you know, the positives of Wembley, as I mentioned, was Samata being a finisher. And yet Davis does have a role, but it's like where and how?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think he's a real weapon if he's used in the right way, but it's just how do you, if you play him, do you play him as the striker, the man who leads the line, or do you have to play him off?
Well, I was just
striker?
About to say, he hasn't established himself as a finisher, so that is the problem. We need goals, but at the moment, the one thing he hasn't shown is, you could play him as a lone striker, but are you getting goals? There's no guarantee at the moment. So Mata, you've got a proper striker there who scores, but Davis potentially can make things happen if he gets the ball in the box, but it's not like Benteke, who could make something happen for himself. It's more like, but it also had a good awareness of what was around him.
Mm-hmm.
Davis is more like he needs support, because he will create something, but he needs somebody to be there to create for.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
And I think I would be reluctant to switch the back four around. I think that's the right way to go.
Yeah.
Unless you're changing things in game. And that is a good option to have. If you're going to play a four, but that's what I was hoping they would do at Wembley. With 10 minutes to go, get Davis on, go three at the back. I'd have pulled off Target, because Mings can play in that left back position pretty well anyway, and just be brave. And I don't think many Villa fans would have moaned at losing 3-1 if they were going for it.
No, neither do I. Same result at the end of the day.
Absolutely. That's cup football, isn't it?
On Instagram, Clever Cream says, Douglas Luiz's lack of stamina regularly struggles to get back when the opposition counter.
Yeah, it's his legs in general.
Yeah, I think he's more of a jogger, isn't he? He's casual. I think that's more Brazilian temperament.
He wants to be a much slower game. He wants to play. I mean, if you put him into Manchester City, where he'd have all the time in the world and can sit deep and pop passes around and then bomb on whenever he wants to, that would suit him. But the kind of team Villa are and where we are in the league, that doesn't suit his style of play. He'd probably flourish at Wolves, for example.
Yeah, or for older listeners, he's more of a Glenn Hoddle type guy. He wants the ball to his feet, and he wants to dictate with the ball. He doesn't want to be running back and chasing around.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, I don't think we have the personnel across the board to carry passengers like decent footballers.
I don't think so. Play
teams off the park. We need, Sheffield United do what they do, blue collar, they graft. And that's how you beat better teams. The teams that we have to play, established top six teams, your Uniteds, your Wolves now, your Liverpools, your Chelseas, we've got to beat them with effort as well.
Yeah, and I think it's the big thing we've been saying all season, and so many people have mentioned it, is the lack of pace, like real pace, not a little bit of pace. You know, Jack can carry the ball, we've got a few people who can run with it, but in terms of that player who's going to scare teams, that will make them back off, We don't have that. We haven't had it for a while, really.
Yeah, we haven't got the players, apart from Grealish, that they actually think about when they got the whiteboard out pre-match.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah.
Quick question as well. Lob Who off Instagram. He says, will Villa be lucky or do they have the talent to get out of the shit that we are in? I mean, based on that Wembley performance, do you think the talent is there?
Well, bits and pieces of it, and from early, there's been you know, bits through the season that suggest that they can mix it with these teams and they can play good football. You're going to need a little bit of luck because you're going to be playing against good teams that as yet we haven't beaten. So in terms of, are we going to have to probably have games like Man City where we don't have much of the ball and then nick a win? Yeah, at some point. But you, however you do it, be it luck, be it quality, if Villa get out of the position they're in and stay up, ultimately they will have deserved to.
Yeah, I think in terms of do we have the talent, I think if you're looking at Hawes and Konsa with their slack marking, I'm thinking, no, we haven't got the talent to go up, because while we've sang their praises in some departments...
Oh, they won't be featuring.
They were better against lesser players, put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that House has disappeared after his marking job at Southampton is no surprise.
I think he might be lucky to get himself a spot on the bench in the running, but I have a feeling that he quite likes Konsa. He'll probably get a spot in the squad, but I think Hawes might have played himself out of contention until May, to be brutally honest.
Yeah.
Aside from like injuries, if they can get a bit... The big thing for luck now really is, can we get our strongest team on the field?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got it once McGinn comes back, in terms of the players that can actually get back, because obviously Heaton...
I think McGinn's huge.
Wesley have gone.
And I don't look at teams in and around us who've got a player like McGinn to come back. You know, Watford lost Delafeu, didn't they?
Well, the teams around us are above us. That's the problem. And we have real tough fixtures. So McGinn being better than what they've got is kind of immaterial. He's got to be able to produce against the teams that are in the top six that we've got to play. And one of the problems was when he was playing a little deeper before he got injured, a lot of people were saying he was off the boil because obviously he wasn't grabbing the headlines. And he wasn't being as effective. So there's a big dilemma for Smith, is if it's shit and bust, which it pretty much is, where do you play McGinn to get the maximum effect out of him?
Probably smack bang in the middle and make him be your box-to-box player.
Because, for example, Grealish didn't have the greatest game, and people were saying, oh, he's not a number eight, he's number... Well, you ask Grealish what number he is, and he'll say he's a number eight. He wants to be everywhere. But the thing is, when you want Grealish as a number 10 or playing, you know, playing slightly forward, then suddenly McGinn by default has to be a bit more withdrawn, and that's a bit of an issue.
But you know, if Marvellous is playing well, then it allows people like him to go. But you need, has Marvellous got the engine to be sort of here, there, and everywhere? I don't know.
Yeah, let's finish on this question. Mr. Linternet asks, answer honestly, he says, if you had to put your house on it, do you think we're staying up?
I'd put the garage on it.
No, he said you got to put your house on it. You actually live in a garage, don't you, bud?
I would say yes, just.
At the moment, I would say no, because I don't want to live out on the streets. I don't want to be homeless.
Come on, Dave. Come on, live a little.
That's what I'm basing this decision on, wanting to live a little bit longer. But that's, you know, that's if I'm putting my house on it, which is a different situation to do I think we will. Hmm. I think we'll know after the Leicester and Chelsea game what's happening.
I'm also really interested to see when the now, you know, obviously rearranged Sheffield and Newcastle games will fall.
Yeah, but they'll be after the Chelsea and Leicester game. So, what I'm saying is if we don't get anything from them, I mean, even one draw from the two games, you know, that would be something. But if we get beaten both of those games, teams pick up games, then suddenly you're looking at a team that's lost touch. You're looking at a team that's confidence is shot through. You're looking at a team that suddenly doesn't believe they're going to stay up. And I don't see this team like your Watfords, like your Bournemouths, who are even, you know, Bournemouth are twitching, and I thought they would be down straight away. Brighton are. These are the teams that have got a bit more muscle about them and a bit more fight and a bit more, let's say they're built as survival teams.
Also a little bit of experience in that position.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. They're built as survival teams. Yeah. That is their role in the Premier League, is to survive. So they're like sandbag teams, if you want a term that I've just made up. You build your sandbags to make sure that the catastrophe of relegation doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Well, we've come up, we've rebuilt ourselves, but we've still got delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, we're trying to be expansive and play like a top six side.
Yeah, so our raison d'etre is not survival, and that potentially we could get caught up in. We're already caught up in it.
Well,
so
we said all season it could be the naivety that kills us.
And that's why I have doubts, because I think you've got Perslow strutting around thinking, I don't think he thought we'd be probably top half.
Which is kind of what I asked him at the AGM, you know, essentially. I said, are we where we thought we wanted to be? You know, surely you can't. I said, yeah, we were hoping we'd be 17th. We were planning on being that. It's like, because I remember he said, didn't he, the day after the playoff final, no, we have no interest in being anywhere near a relegation fight.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. They kind of thought, we've been smart here, and I think he has. Old Suso will be under the microscope at the end of the season.
Hugely.
That'll be number one.
Hugely.
They're kind of like thick as thieves. So we shall see. But yeah, I, as I say, I don't think we're built as a survival team, so we've got problems. So if we don't get something from Chelsea and Leicester, which is basically it'd be a positive knock-on from our performance against Manchester City. Mm-hmm. But in the cold light of day, if we don't get anything from those two games, then I'm getting the scythe out and the Grim Reaper costumes coming up.
Planning the gallows humour.
Well, no, it's nothing to be, you know.
It won't be funny this time, will it? It's not like the year we went down when it was a laughingstock. This will be a painful one.
Yeah, because that's like a culmination of
five years of decay.
Yeah, this is built on hope and the bright future that finally seemed to be appearing. Suddenly, like a West Brom, you're a yo-yo club.
Yeah,
but let's not get into the dark permutations of it. But most people can guess them straight off the bat. Anyway, that was the last question. Always finish on a high. But yeah, we will see what happens, and that's going to be obviously the interest in the next few podcasts, is how this develops. But as I said, I just hope we get something from the next couple of games to keep us in this and keep us game, because just the strength of the opposition we have to play, then, you know, after those two games, you've got Wolves, Liverpool, United, and we could be out of this before it even gets to the final furlong.
A final question then. How many points do you think? How many points do we need?
Well, I'm not interested in, we need this from this amount of games. I'm just interested in the next game, and that's Leicester. And, you know, I've got to practice what I preach.
Well, I'm off to bed then.
Right. See you later, mate. Bye.
Ta-ra.
And before we go, don't forget, after the end credits is the latest Scott Hogan touch count, which played out, I think it was between Dan and Chris, which played out in episode number 100, if you haven't listened
featuring
to that
show. Featuring Gary Gardner.
Yeah, featuring some Gary Gardner stats as well, to astound. Please do, if you haven't already, subscribe and follow on whatever you listen to this podcast on, be it Spotify, Apple, or any of the other apps. And also, please do, if you want extra podcast shows, there's a couple at least going out in the next few days, do sign up to be a patron at myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron option. Also on the shop option, you will have access to all the latest codes for discounts on Villa kits and everything that I keep updated, and also where you can get My Old Man Said t-shirts and also mugs. Thank you very much for listening as always, and until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
I think it's time we have a 100th century episode installment of the Scott Hogan Touch Count Meter. So you were stripped of your title. The governing body had to strip Dan Rogers of his title.
I just requested to be stripped.
He is the linear. He's the man who beat the man who beat the man, as Tyson Fury likes to say. Well, recently, Max Stokes beat Chris Budd. So Max Stokes is kind of technically the champion. But anyway, who gives a shit? The context is a lot has happened in the universe of Scott Hogan. He has gone to the Blues. Mm-hmm. We've discussed this in a previous show. Mm-hmm. And he's suddenly turned into, he's up there with Aguero, probably. He's the championship's Aguero all of a sudden. Banging it. Four goals in five games. I mean, the man's on fire.
He scored on his debut.
Yeah. You can't stop him. So we can focus back on Scott Hogan. Sorry, if you haven't listened to the show, when we've had a Scott Hogan touch count meter, quickly the rules, what there is of them. It's the best of three. First to win two rounds. Each round, the two competitors have two rounds each to guess how many touches either Scott Hogan or whatever other player we are talking about had. They will get the time that they played and, you know, the context of the game. If after two guesses they don't get it, then there's a third round, which there may be a clue there to help them out if both competitors are way off the mark. But anyway, first to two, Dan Rogers has pulled off some miracle wins when he's been down, but then pulled it back out of nowhere. Just ask Ben Redding about that.
Wherever he is. Sobbing.
Still crying about right, let's get into the first round of the first game. Just a bit of context, Scott Hogan. Obviously, he was a bit part sub at Stoke until the Blues swept in. I think he actually got subbed off the only game he did start at Millwall at half time. In the wilderness until mid-December onwards, and then Blues thought, this is exactly what we need to fire up our season. So off he went to the Blues, and he now plays in a 4-4-2 with Lukas Jukovic. And it's doing pretty well. Well, they've had some pretty good results since Hogan's been in the team. Let's go more recent backwards. Played Sheffield Wednesday, drew 3-3 against a team where Barry Bannon scored against them. He was very happy to score against the Blues. I think, did he say something on social media, or was it an interview?
Didn't he say he can basically retire now?
Yeah.
Strange chap.
The claret and blue blood still courses through his veins, apparently.
He's Scottish.
Anyway, who's going first?
Dan's back. I'll let him put his marker down.
Right, so he played the full game.
Uh-huh.
Goal and an assist.
Oh, my
two
word.
Shots on target. That's all I'm saying. And obviously his goal was...
So we had four touches then.
a volley in injury time.
To great goal, to be fair.
Make it 3-3. Yeah, it is actually. It's just exactly what we need. How many touches?
12.
From the Rogers, Chris Budd?
20.
Second round?
14.
14 from the Rogers, Chris Budd, surfing the internet quickly.
Yeah.
Can't find it.
Swiping away.
I'm saying, play the full 90s. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say 22.
22. Nobody's got it yet. We're going to a third and final round. The only clue I'll give you is it's less than 50.
Right.
Thanks for your generosity, then. Okay. So I reckon I'm on the low side.
I'm gonna throw in some statistic for you. It's I don't know if this helps you or not. His pass completion was 91.7.
One pass, then he just had loads of shots.
91.7.
28.
Final go from the Rogers. Now we're going to Mr. Budd.
30.
Ooh, trying to fence it in. First round goes to Mr. Budd.
No. Come on, back in the game.
24 touches.
What on earth is he doing, this Scott Hogan guy?
This is like he's at least doubling.
This is ruining the game. This is far too many touches.
Was he doing kick-ups before the game or something? I feel concerned that the boundaries of
just another statistic that I picked up.
This is kind of
a hollow
victory, to be honest.
While I was compiling these stats, I also picked up that Gary Gardner had, and I think it's a shame that I'm doing it in reverse, but we're going to see how Gary Gardner has actually got better, because, but he's still bad. 47 touches from Gary Gardner playing centre mid, 72.7% completion, pass completion, which isn't great, put it that way.
But yeah, we'll Blues see. Don't play passing football, do they?
I'll give you an update on his completion rates as we go into the next game. So previously they played Brentford. 1-1 draw. Now, there's a little bit of information I want to slide in here on the sly. Dean Smith, bit of criticism of Dean Smith floating around, obviously because of our precarious situation. Bit of a statistic for you. Yeah. Brentford, before Dean Smith came along, finished fifth, got in the playoffs. Dean Smith comes along eighth, ninth, 12th, whatever, 10th, whatever. Brentford now back in fifth in the playoff spots. Should we read anything into this? Should we read anything into this? Just putting it out there. Make of it what you will. Anyway, Scott Hogan, Chris Gophers, 1-0 up. Played 74 minutes before being pulled off. How many touches in 74 minutes? It's getting plenty of game time.
19.
19 from the bird.
70 minutes. I'm going to go 16.
16 from Mr. Rogers.
Who's he not playing again?
Brentford.
Away or home?
At home.
Oh, okay. What did I say first? 19. 21. I'll be generous.
I think this is the only game he hasn't scored in. Sorry, what was that?
21.
What did I say first, go?
16.
I'm going to go 19.
You can't have that. Mr. Budd already has
18.
That. 18 from the Rogers. We go into a final round. As I said, he didn't score in the game. I'm going to say, again, another useless clue. It was lower than 30.
22.
22 from the Budd.
I think I'm being really generous here.
Can Dan Rogers put this one away?
27.
Oof, 27. Obviously read into my clue a bit too much, maybe. But doesn't matter, because he still won. It was 17. Either side. Ooh, that was 16 a close one for and 18. Once. He was peppering the target.
We were, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's more like the Scott Hogan we've come to know and love.
Yeah. One all. We go into the decider. On that little sidetrack, Gary Gardner, 57 touches, 60% completion rate.
That is terrible.
That's stinking the place out.
So, just to give listeners a bit of context, normally Villa players around, even if they're having a shocker, you're around low 80s, aren't you?
Even Isaiah Osborne sat somewhere there going, fucking. And it's also proof you can't play football with hooves.
And it's truth. If your game's not going very well, don't get your brother Craig to coach you.
Oh, crikey.
Play a coach, club. Craig Gardner.
There's three games. Shall I bunch these together?
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Do it.
So here's what we've got. We have got full 90 minutes against Barnsley. He had three shots, two on target, and a goal. Now, in that game against Barnsley, Gary Gardner, I'll get this out of the way now, 49 touches. Pass completion, 48.6%.
Wow.
Incredible.
And do you think there were people at Villa who were...
He's the next Steven Gerrard.
Fuck, he's absolute muck.
We'll look forward to playing against him next year then.
Jesus.
How can you have 48.6% pass completion and you're like meant to be their main man midfielder or one of them?
And one in less than one in two passes, he found a blue shirt.
Right. So Hogan played the whole game against Barnsley, three shots, two on target and a goal. Against Bristol City, two shots on target and a goal. And that was another 90 minutes, I think. And against Nottingham Forest, where they won. I think it was 2-1. Also scored in that. 83 minutes. I can hear tapping a keyboard, Dan Rogers.
Do you know what? It's not. It's me. It's my Bic pen. I'm actually writing it all down. Right. I'm taking this serious on my return.
83 minutes. So he's pretty much... I think he's played every game, every minute, apart from 7 minutes. So it's, 180 plus 80. So 263 minutes of football from Mr. Scott Hogan. How many touches, Dan Rogers going first, in three games?
The cumulative total, I think.
Yeah.
I think.
three games, and he scored three goals.
I'm going to go with 60.
60 from Mr. Dan Rogers. Chris Bird, brain just going into overdrive now.
78.
78. Mm. Chris sees the new revamped Hogan.
Mm. 70.
Oh, it scares Rogers into going higher.
I have no fear. Chris should be fearful.
I'm not the Villa here, Dan. I've got nothing to lose.
Mm, I know
it's not my crown.
What are you going for, Chris?
What did I say? 78.
69. Motherfucker.
Right, we're going into a third round.
Mm.
It's higher than 40, lower than 80.
Thanks. Well, okay. That's Gary Gardner's completion.
Okay. 65.
65 from Dan Rogers. Better check my maths, actually. You've had 78 and 69, Chris.
Mm-hmm. And my final guess is 60.
I've had 60.
You can't have that. I had 60.
Oh, can't have everything.
That was Dan's opening
61.
Bid.
Oh,
you
fuck.
Oh, Chris, but if only you went the other way, because it's 59, Dan Rogers wins.
Oh, do you know, Chris,
he's
Chris,
back with close a
your
bang.
Eyes. Close your eyes, Chris. You know, towards the end of the Fury fight where he licks the blood off Wilder. Just imagine.
So close. I mean, that. what is another metaphor for that?
You've been rogered.
You've been rogered.
You know when you've been rogered.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.